what Tom and I found, and I think most people would agree, is that there's a kind of a culture of permissiveness about election fraud in Arkansas, and because we make jokes about it. The title of the book, of course, Waiting for the Cemetery Vote. Vote early and vote often. You've heard all those phrases. So it's, election fraud is more than anything else a kind of a joke in Arkansas, and not just in Arkansas, but in, I think, the South as well. But at any rate, we kind of trace it back to that really divisive era, a violent era in which both sides considered it so important that they win the election and get control again from the evildoers on the other side, that anything you did was justifiable, up to and including murder. And so there was some acceptance of that, and it was kind of passed down from generation to generation, and particularly in these counties that we write particularly about, Conway County, which is where that assassination occurred, in which was a good part of this book deals with that long history of election fraud and bossism in that little mountain county.
Well, Tom Glaze, who years later would become such a champion for Arkansans and citizens' rights for their votes to count, he's not a native Arkansan. He migrated south from Joplin.
No, that's right. He was a native of Joplin, Missouri. And he had a very colorful father and family. And he came down to, when he finished high school, he came down to Fayetteville to play football and baseball for the Razorbacks. And indeed, he did spend his career there playing baseball, and he went out for football and got mad at Jack Mitchell, who was the head coach at the time, and early in his freshman year, and one afternoon, he got mad at a scrimmage because he wasn't getting to play. Mitchell wasn't inserting him into the scrimmage, so he took his pads off and turned him in and quit. But he remained there and stayed, got his degree, and then went to law school there and graduated in 1964. But by that time, he was pretty well steeped in Arkansas and stayed here.
He says, and points out, that in the election fraud incidents in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, usually you had one of two things, if not both, playing a role: alcohol and the absentee box. The absentee box was a wonderful way to try to alter election results.
It is. What you could do, you know, the whole state was not crooked. I mean, we don't suggest that election fraud was that massive. But you could pretty much determine where there was voting theft on a sizable scale simply by looking at the end of the election, looking at the percentage of votes cast that were cast absentee. Normally about 2 or 3%, sometimes less, of the overall vote will be cast absentee. That is, people who knew in advance that they were not going to be on election around that day and couldn't cast the vote in person, so they cast an absentee ballot. But in some of these counties, like Madison County, just south of you, and Perry County, and particularly Conway County, the absentee ballot sometimes would exceed 10%. Sometimes several points above that of the total vote. And these are rural counties, which you wouldn't think of as counties where there would be with a transitory population, people that would be traveling a lot on business and so forth on election day. So that would be a good barometer. You could look at that and say, okay, that's probably a crooked county because they have a high absentee ballot vote, and they're probably dishonest in other ways as well, which is what he found in Conway County. There was a huge amount of absentee election fraud, but also the same people who were doing that were complicit at the individual polling precincts and fostering illegal ballots there as well. But as I say, yeah, absentee ballot is a big one. Liquor, too. Of course, one of the more entertaining chapters, I think, deals with Searcy County, which is Marshall is the county seat up there in the mid-range of the Ozarks. that's where whiskey and vote buying were played a big role.
And then there's the whole process of counting the votes and waiting to count. There's several examples of this, but one that Tom discusses in the book, Waiting for the Cemetery Vote, is in Conway County, and it's the year that Governor Dale Bumpers was running against Senator Bill Fulbright and the Snoop Sisters, these women who are ready to take battle and fight this laissez-faire attitude that's in the county about election fraud. But the polls close at 8, and there's a nice chest of beer, and it's in a gymnasium, and they, you know, the poll workers are shooting baskets, knocking back a few beers. They don't start counting votes till midnight because they want to know vote totals from other counties.
Exactly. And there are several instances of that. You described one of them, and also a colorful one in the special election in January of 1975 to fill the state Senate seat of Mutt Jones, who had been convicted of tax fraud and expelled by the Senate to have a special election to fill that seat. And on election night, there was a young lawyer, well, he was a law student at the UALR Law School, who was recruited by Glaze, 10 or 12 of them, to go in and be service poll watchers. And so he's a poll watcher at one precinct, and so at, when the polls closed, they all sit around and talk a while, start drinking. And so he said, when are you going to count the votes? And they said, oh, not till after supper. And then one by one, they all kind of filtered out and went to supper and came back and then sat around again for a couple of hours, and until finally about 9:30, 10 o'clock, I guess they got the message from Sheriff Hawkins about how many votes they needed, how things were going in the other two counties. And so sometime along about midnight, they finished counting the votes, and Joe Purvis, the poll watcher, said they were going to take the ballots and the results down to the courthouse. And so they said, I think the vote count was maybe 4-1 for the machine candidate over Stanley Russ. So Purvis stopped him and said, wait a minute, Jim, I think we have a problem here. You've counted 28 more votes than there were people who came in here today to vote. So they looked kind of embarrassed for the first time, and one of them said, well, I'll tell you what, son, we'll just give all those 28 votes to your boy Russ and call it even. And he said, well, I don't think it works that way. So when they get down to the courthouse, he reports that to the prosecuting attorney, Alex Street, and there's an investigation, and eventually it ends, winds up in about four or five of the election workers in that precinct, the election judges and clerks getting indicted for election fraud, and they eventually pled guilty to misdemeanor. But that was kind of the undoing of Conway County, that Joe Purvis's almost accidental discovery of those that overage of 28 votes in that precinct. I mean, that was a small number, but it was indicative of the fraud that was going on all over the county. And so that incident helped them get into federal court and get the thing corrected.
You know, we make jokes about election fraud, be it Arkansas, Louisiana, or Cook County, Illinois, and they're colorful stories. And it is funny, but really, when you think about it, it's not at all. And Tom Glaze was something of not just a champion, but really kind of a hero for the Arkansas voter taking on corruption in these counties.
Well, he was, and that's you know, he was involved in the politics of the era. I mean, that's actually how he got started. Rockefeller was running for governor in 1964 for the first time, and was convinced that he started all 50,000 votes in the hole, because that's approximately how many votes he was told that could be manipulated in a statewide election. So he was recruited right out of law school. He didn't have any particular affinity for Rockefeller. He didn't even know him or either party, but it was a job when he got out of law school. And so he gets involved in all of that and becomes a familiar figure in Arkansas over the next dozen years or so, and something of a hero. I mean, he does have a white hat, and he was a subject of a number of Fisher cartoons, and one of them is on the cover of this book. So he was something of a hero to the Arkansas populace, I think, when he decides in 1978 to run for office himself, and he runs for a chancery judgeship, and he's helped no end by that familiarity and good image that he has with people. Plus, Fisher cartoons played a role in his getting elected to office for the first time, and then he used that as a springboard. He was elected to the Court of Appeals 2 or 4 years later, and then in 1986 he was elected to the state Supreme Court. So yes, that catapulted him into a successful political career of his own. That kind of image that he had fighting election fraud in the 60s and 70s.